Let's talk a little bit about Hanukkah tonight, since we're running out of chances to do so. So, with my apologies for anyone hoping for Parshas Shavua. What?
Okay.
Well, we can get the Parsha afterwards. But a few thoughts on Hanukkah, since this is our last two nights to enjoy Hanukkah this year. I wanted to share with you a beautiful, beautiful insight from Rav Yigal Ariel of Ramat HaGolan. Fascinating insight, based on a diuk that others, such as Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, have pointed out as well. And that begins with the Rambam in Hilchas Chanukah. The Rambam, in the very beginning of Hilchas Chanukah, in Hilchas Chanukah, Perek Gimel Halacha Aleph, gives us a background to the Nes of Chanukah. And rather than just saying, as he normally would, here's the Halachas of Chanukah, you got a light menorah, you got a say halal, you got to do X, Y, and Z. The Rambam, in the first two halachos of Hilchos Chanukah, gives us a whole deduction as to what happened. And he begins by saying that, well, during the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, the Greek rulers instituted terrible decrees against the Jewish people. They prevented them from worshipping, from observing their religion. They did not let them study Torah, perform mitzvos. They took their money, they took their daughters. They broke into the Beis HaMikdash, they contaminated that which was pure, that which was tahar. They oppressed the Jews terribly, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu had compassion upon us, saved us, and the sons of the Chashmonai, the Kohanim HaGedolim, overpowered the Greeks, killed them, saved the Jews. The Ha'amidu Melech Min HaKohanim, they appointed a king from the Kohanim, meaning from the Chashmonai. V'chazra malchus liYisrael yeser almasayim shana, and kingship was restored to Israel. They became independent rulers over themselves once again for more than the next 200 years, until the second Churban occurred. And then the Rambam describes, and when they overpowered the Greeks and they came into the Beis HaMikdash, they didn't find any pure oil. They only found one flask, which could only last for one day, and it lit for 8 days until they were able to find or produce more pure oil. Okay, so it seems very straightforward. A basic introduction based on the miraculous military victory and the miracle of the Shemen. And then the Rambam says, "Mepnei zeh, because of all this, they instituted the din of 8 days of simcha, of hallel, of lighting neros at the entrance to the homes."
It tells a story.
That's a halacha. Right, which is itself very unique. Meaning, why is Rambam giving us a whole story here? That itself is somewhat perplexing. Rambam is a halacha man. He doesn't give us history. He doesn't give us stories. So that alone, Rav Soloveitchik suggested, the pshat might be very simply, that because the whole basis for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the purpose of Ner Chanukah, is pursue menisa, you have to publicize the nes. Well, you can't publicize the nes if you don't know what happened. So by Purim, where there's also pursue menisa, we have the Megillah we read. It says what the purpose of Megillah is, and what the Mishloach Manos is all about, and what the Matanos Levim is all about. We have the Megillah by Purim to tell us what actually happened and to be mefaris in the nes. By Chanukah, we don't read any Megillah. We say Hallel. So the Rambam apparently is concerned. If we're lighting menorah, and the whole purpose of menorah is to publicize the nes, you first have to tell me what the nes is. So the Rambam says, well, before you begin with the halachas of Chanukah, you have to know first what the nes is, what the miracle is that you're supposed to be publicizing. So the Rambam feels it necessary to describe to us the nes historically, so we know exactly what we're being mefaris in with the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. But what is unique about the Rambam's description of the Nes is that he doesn't just say there was a military victory and there was a pure flask of oil that lasted 8 days. He adds in one more seemingly extraneous, unnecessary historical point. And that is
the Malchus lasted
for more than 200 years. Right. He writes, Hashem had compassion upon the Jews, saved them, V'gavru b'nei Chashmonai Kohanim HaGadolim, v'hargum, v'hoshiu Yisrael miyadam. The Chashmonaim overpowered the Greeks and killed them and saved the Jews. He could have stopped right there. That was the nes. But he continues, and he says, V'ha'amidu melech min ha'kohanim. They appointed a king from the Kohanim, from the Chashmonaim. V'chazra malchus liYisrael yeser amasayim shana. And kingship was restored to Klal Yisrael for more than 200 years until the Churban Hasheni. Why is that necessary? Why is that critical? Why do I have to know that in advance of learning Hilchos Chanukah, in advance of lighting Neros Chanukah? Why is that so important?
Because
You would think the miracle is military victory and the Pach Shemen. That's it, right? That's the Gemara on Shabbos describes the Pach Shemen. Ahal Nisim describes the Milchamos. That's all I got to know. And yet the Rambam finds it important enough to add in the fact that the Chashmonaim became the kings, and the Malchus was restored for more than 200 years. So the Rav suggests, well, maybe the emphasis here is for the following reason. What was Yavan all about? What did they try to accomplish? What was their goal? What was their main thrust of attack against the Jewish people?
Spiritual destruction,
right? They broke into the Mikdash, they were metame to Taharos, as Rambam says. They partsu bo pirtzos timu ha-taharos. They contaminated that which was pure in the Beis HaMikdash. So perhaps the Rav suggested, why is the Rambam stressing that ha'emidu melech min ha-kohanim? They appointed a king from amongst the Kohanim?
Maybe because it's not supposed to happen.
That's true, but why is that important in the context of the Nes of Hanukkah, though? So that Rav suggests, very interestingly, what is the purpose of the Kohanim? What is their role? What is their... To work in the Mikdash, and more than just work there, but to safeguard it. Veshamru, Mishmeres, the Torah speaks of them safeguarding the watch of the Mikdash. Shamrus, Mishmarti, they have to safeguard the procedures and the tahara of the Beis HaMikdash. That you can't allow someone who's not supposed to be coming in to come in. They're not allowed someone who's not supposed to be doing the avodah to do the avodah. They're charged with the responsibility of ensuring the ongoing sanctity of the avodah in the Mikdash. So perhaps Rambam is stressing that dafka because the Yevanim contaminated the taharos in the Mikdash. They broke into the Mikdash and defiled it. So a fitting Yeshua from that attack, so to speak, was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliberately assigned the Malchus to the Kohanim. They who are charged with the role and the mission of safeguarding the taharos of the Mikdash, when they themselves became the Malchus, became the Malachim, so they are then in a position more than anybody else to ensure that role is adhered to and is fulfilled properly. And so it was perhaps like a fitting conclusion to the story of Yavan and Bnei Yisrael that dafka, those who are assigned the role generally of ensuring the sanctity of the Mikdash, were the ones who were put in the position which made them most capable of seeing to it that it would be done, because the Kohanim became the Malachim, and therefore they were completely in control and more than ever able to see to it that they performed that mission properly of safeguarding the Taharas of the Mikdash.
Why the 200 years?
Ah, very good. So, right, that doesn't explain why the emphasis on more than 200 years.
Wasn't this also frowned upon?
That's what we're getting to, right. Meaning, if this was the only issue, that those who safeguard the Mikdash were then put in the position where they could control the Mikdash, so fine, just stop right there. But the Rambam goes beyond that. The Rambam says that Chazra Malchus Leisrael Yesra Al Masayim Shanim, that the Malchus was restored to Klal Yisrael for more than 200 years. So that itself is seemingly additional point that Rambam is stressing as being a point of value, a point worthy of giving Shevach V'Hadot HaKadosh Baruch Hu for. So that is, I'll have to come back to that. That's a very, very important point here. But as you point out, Shalom, the very fact that Rambam includes this in his description of the Nes indicates that whatever the reason for the emphasis is, but he certainly viewed it as part of the Nes, as cause for celebration. And that is very much against the Shita of the Ramban. Because the Ramban in Sefer Bereishis, in Parshas Vayechi, specifically criticizes the Chashmonaim for taking the role of kingship. Why? What could be wrong with it? Right. Pasuk Vayechi says, Lo Yosef Shev Mi'Yehuda, Umechokik Mi'Ben Raglov, Adki Yavo Shilo, that Yaakov Vinu says specifically in his bracha to Yehuda, that the rule, the reign of kings, shall never leave Shevet Yehuda until the coming of Mashiach. The Ramban writes over there in Perek Memtes, Pasuk Yud. Ramban says, very fascinating and very, very startling comment. The Ramban says the following. He says that Melachim who ruled over Klal Yisrael from Shvatim other than that of Shevet Yehuda, he says when they ruled for an extended period of time, king after king, and they did not restore the Malchus to Yehuda, they violated the mitzvah given by Yaakov Avinu, and they were punished as a result. And then he proceeds to say, the Ramban, that this was the onesh of the Chashmonaim, who ruled during the second Beis HaMikdash. He concedes, he says, ki hayu chassidei elyon. They were pious, supremely pious people. He says, v'el malehem, if not for the Chashmonaim, nishtakcho ha-Torah v'ha-mitzvos mi-Yisrael. Right? The Yivanim were lashkicham Torah sechel. If not for the Chashmonaim, Torah would have been forgotten, mitzvos would have been abandoned. They saved all of that. And even so, says the Ramban, ne'en shu onesh gadol, they were terribly punished. How does he see that? He says, because first of all, four of the Chashmonaim, four of the sons of Matisyo, he says, ultimately, despite their gevura and their hatzlacha, they were killed by the enemy. Four of them. And not only that, Ramban says further, he says, ultimately, the onesh came to the following. The Gemara says in Bava Basra, on Daf Gimel Amid Beis, what? Right. The Gemara says in Bava Basra, Daf Gimel Amid Beis, that every last member of the Chashmonaim family was assassinated, was killed out. Their line of descendants ended, terminated. Right. The Gemara says that Hordas, who was a slave of the Chashmonaim family, rebelled, succeeded in killing every last member of the Chashmonaim family, with the exception of one girl he wanted to marry. That girl, in an effort to avoid such a fate, committed suicide. And before doing so, she proclaimed, if anyone claims to be descended from the Chashmonaim, they're nothing but slaves, because I'm the only last survivor, and I'm about to commit suicide. And she did. So Ramban says, it's unbelievable. Every last member of their descendants was destroyed, was wiped out. How could this be? So Ramban says, Shenichrusu kulam v'avon hazeh. They were all killed ultimately because of this chait of stealing the Malchus Yisrael.
So the complaint against the Rambam is that he considers it a good thing.
Exactly. Right. So the Ramban says, actually, in stark contrast to what we said in the Ramban says, and maybe there was also an additional chait that they were Kohanim. And the Kohanim's sole exclusive mission, says Ramban, is what? Tishmeru es kuhun aschem l'chol dvar ha-mizbeach v'avadetem avodas matona eten es kuhun aschem. That their exclusive mission is working in the Mikdash. They should not have ruled over Klal Yisrael. They should have stayed exclusively with Avodas Hashem. So whereas we suggested, Ramban from the Rav, that this was a plus, that they were able to do both, the molech and to safeguard the kahuna and the kedusha of the mikdash, Ramban says, no, that was an additional problem. They were supposed to focus exclusively on the mikdash and not on anything else. So not only were they penalized for taking the malchus when they weren't from Shevi Yehuda, but they were penalized because they were, in a sense, neglecting what should have been their sole focus, which was Avodas HaMikdash.
Is the Ramban without an answer?
So the Ramban clearly views the taking of the malchus as a terrible chait. So terrible that despite the fact that they were Chassidei Elyon, who saved Klal Yisrael spiritually, they ultimately were all wiped out, which is an incredible, incredible statement to make. Now the Rambam, on the other hand, sorry?
Can you give an answer in defense of the Chashman of saying
So definitely could, but I think the Ramban stresses that it was, you know,
Ben Acha Ben.
It went on for a long, long time, right. I don't think it would have, it seems like he would not have been so upset about it, so to speak, had it just been temporarily. But it was for 200 years. You know, for an extended period of time. They never tried to restore it to where it should have gone to. They stabilized it a long time ago. They should have given back to Malchus Yehuda.
Was Malchus Yehuda really stable at that point?
I mean, they could have appointed a Malchus Yehuda and propped him up.
But to be honest, was Malchus Yehuda really stable at the time during the second bias?
Well, why was it any less stable than the Chashmonai Malchus was?
We were saying the concept of the Yosef Shevim Yehuda is based on the concept that Malchus Yehuda is a stable, sturdy. In addition to being the sanctioned malchus, it's a stable, sturdy.
Is it based on that? I don't know.
Looking at the bias fusion, you have malchus, and it didn't work. So I'm saying I'm not familiar with the story and how the historical origins of bias sheni. But I'm saying was malchus a stable regime?
I mean, they never. I think they could have you know, garnered national support to prop it up and to restore it, and they never even tried to. I think that was the problem. That was the problem. So the Rambam, and this Ariel points out, the Rambam does in Hilchos Melachim Perek Aleph Halacha Ches grant legitimacy to a melech that's appointed by a navi from other shvatim of Klal Yisrael. As Rambam does say that there is a possibility, if a navi appoints a melech from other shivtei Yisrael, that melech then becomes, you know, al pidin, recognized as a melech with all the relevant guidelines of malchus. So it is possible, the Rambam just in general is of the opinion that a melech from other shvatim does have legitimacy. And the truth is, the Gemara itself, Rav Ariel points out, does seem to view the Malchei Chashmonoi as legitimate Melachim. The Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Yates speaks about Yanai HaMelech, who was one of the Chashmonoi kings. And the Gemara says that based on a story that occurred with Yanai HaMelech, when he was brought to a Beis Din and the Dayanim were too afraid to order him to conduct himself in a certain manner because they had Yiras HaMelech, based on that, the Chachamim decided, from now on, Melech Lo Danin, Lo Danin also, you can't drag a Melech into Beis Din. It's clear the Gemara viewed the Chashmonai kings as legitimate Melachim. So Kibbutz Rambam derived his approach from that Gemara, which seems to grant legitimacy, at least from Chazal's perspective, to these Malchei Chashmonai as legitimate kings. However, and this is where the beautiful lesson can begin to be seen, the question becomes the following. The Rambam, as you pointed out, isn't just saying that, you know, we grant legitimacy to the Malchei Beis Chashmonai, and, you know, that was part of the Nes. He stresses the fact that their Malchus extended for 200 years. It says, V'chazra Malchus Li'Yisrael Yesra Amasayim Shana. The reason why that's so startling is because if you think about it, from the 200 years the Rambam speaks of, from the time of the Chashmonai revolt until the Churban Bayis Sheni, included in that 200 years, the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Daf Tes Amud Aleph, says 103 years was the Malchus Chashmonai, and the second 103 years was the Malchus of Hordus. So the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Daf Tes, tells us that after this time of Hanukkah, 103 years the Malchus Chashmonai ruled, and then after that, the next 103 years, Hordus and his family ruled. So when the Rambam says that Chazra Malchus Yisrael for more than 200 years, he's clearly basing his calculation on this Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that there was total 206 years from the time of Hanukkah till the Churban Bayis Sheni. And the Rambam views that all as a positive, which is incredible. Why? Who was Hordus? What was he known for?
Terrorist.
He was a terrorist slave who killed out the Malchei Beis Chashmonai. Not only that, the Gemara from Basra and Daf Gimel says that...
Jewish.
What?
Unclear he was Jewish.
Well, he was an Eved, so he was Chayav and Mitzvos as an Eved. Right. More than that, after he rebelled and killed out the family of the Chashmonaim, the Gemara says he said to himself, what stands between me and taking control of the kingship? It's this Chazal who said that Som Tosim Alecha Melech, you have to appoint a king Mikarev Achecha, one of yours, not an Eved. So the Gemara says, Hordus said to himself, oh, the rabbis, they're causing me problems, kill them all out. Wiped out every last one of the leading Chachamim. So it makes this incredible. So the Rambam now is telling us that 200 and plus years of Malchus was a tremendous chelik of the Nes of Chanukah. And including that 200 years, he's counting the years of Hordus, who rebelled, killed out the Chashmonai family, and not only that, but killed out the family, the leading Rabbanim at that time. Not only was it Hordus, but even Yanai himself. The Gemara in Brachas Daf Mem Ches, Yanai is one of the Chashmonai kings, even before Hordus, presumably. The Gemara says that Yanai HaMelech, one of the Chashmonai kings, was sitting with his wife eating lunch or supper, and it came time to bench, and he wanted to have someone bench on his behalf, to be motzi him benching. And the Gemara said he had a problem, because since he had killed all the Rabbanon out, no one knew how to bench. So he said to his wife, any rabbi left who knows how to bench? And she said, well, if you swear to me that you won't, you know, mistreat him, like you did the others, I'll bring you one. And he swears to her, and she, the queen, brings in her own brother, who was Shimon ben Shetach, one of the Gedolei HaTanoim. The whole story is incredible. So you have Yanai HaMelech, who was a melech of the Beis Chashmonai, who killed out every last leading Tana, I guess, or Chacham at that time.
Not Yanai, he didn't kill out.
Yanai also. Hordus did, and Yanai also did. Hordus was later, presumably. Yanai, before him, also the same thing, the Gemara says, wiped out all the Rabbanon. So you have two of these melechim Yanai from Beis Hashmonai, and Hurdis, who was the Eved who rebelled against the Hashmonai and killed them all out. Both these two Malachim, the Gemara says about them, Katluhu Lukulu Rabbanan, they killed out the Chachamim. And this is what the Rambam is saying, Achazer Malchus Yisrael Yasser Amasayim Shana, Chelik of the Nesim Chanukah was that Malchus Yisrael endured for 200 years. That's remarkable. How could that be viewed as a Chelik of the Nes? Sort of Ariel suggests is that apparently the Rambam is clearly teaching us that there is value to Malchus Yisrael even when some of those Malchi Yisrael are chotim in the worst way. You have two Malachim who killed out the Rabbanon. Now, how much worse can it get? And yet the Rambam views that as nevertheless Chazra Malchus Yisrael. And in fact, the Gemara of Basra tells us in Daf Dalet that Bava Ben Buta, one of the last surviving Chachamim at the time of Hordas, recommended to Hordas when he wanted to do tshuva, he recommended to Hordas that you rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, or renovate the Beis HaMikdash. No, he was, right? Renovate the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Herodian stones we have today. Right? Hordas renovated the Harbayas, the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara there says that, Mishalo Rab Binyan Hordas, La Rab Binyan Noam Miyamav. If you didn't see what Hordas did for the Beis HaMikdash, you never saw a beautiful building in your lifetime. Meaning, you had this Rasha who killed out the Chachamim, and yet was given the opportunity to become a shutuf in renovating nothing less than the Beis HaMikdash itself. And not only was he given the opportunity to participate in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, but he was complimented for creating a binyan, not one of the most beautiful buildings or structures that anyone ever laid eyes on. So, you see, says of Ariel, it's a remarkable insight that you can have Malchus Yisrael or Achotim, and yet the Chachamim are willing to ask them to assist in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash itself, in the renovating the Beis HaMikdash itself. And the Rambam credits their reign with the term Malchus Yisrael, which we're thankful for during the Yom Tov of Chanukah. So what's the idea here? The idea apparently is that when we're trying to fight a battle of assimilation, when there were Misyavnim and Yevanim trying to corrupt Jewish culture and blend us in with them, Malchus Yisrael, which identified as Jews, even if they were Chotim, but they identified as Jewish Malachim, as Malchus Yisrael, they gave us independence, and it was that independence which enabled the religious renaissance, so to speak, to be metar the Beis HaMikdash and to grow religiously from there. And so Ariel concludes very beautifully. He says, you know, people ask, what are we celebrating Chanukah today for? Today Maccabees means a basketball team in Tel Aviv. You know, is there more Misyavnim, than that? You know, that's unfortunate to say there's so many secular Jews, so many Jews who, you know, are trying to blend into the culture around us. So, you know, what are we celebrating? So, one suggestion he has is that, nevertheless, there's Malchus Yisrael. The Malchus Yisrael that exists today, which grants us the opportunity to be independent in Eretz Yisrael once again, and which, as we've clearly seen, has led to an unbelievable renaissance of yeshivas, of Talmud Torah, of Harbatzas Torah, in a manner that is unprecedented in I don't know how long and how many centuries. You know, when was the last time we saw a Harbatzas Torah on the level of habit today in Eretz Yisrael? It's unbelievable. He says, all because there's a Malchus Yisrael today. And yes, people can tie in a Chotim this, Chotim that, but it's the very same idea. The Rambam credits the Malchus Beis Hashmonaim, even the Chotim amongst them, with the term of Malchus Yisrael Masayim Shana. And so today, we have to appreciate the Malchus Yisrael that we have, even when, perhaps, some of them are Chotim, yes or no, but the Malchus Yisrael itself is a tremendous value and one that we have to be very appreciative of, because it can, and it has, as we've seen, spur and foster tremendous religious renaissance in Eretz Yisrael. Good question. It's very hard to understand the rationalizations of those that are very irrational. I don't know.
Religious Zionist propaganda that we believe, like this is the Rambam. Like, isn't that more acceptable?
So they'll say the Rambam didn't mean it that way. I guess the point is not explicitly black and white that they, you know, have to be able to refute it. It's unfortunate. I mean, unfortunately, those individuals you know, anyone who's willing to, you know, hug and embrace and kiss someone who has avowed to, you know, kill millions of Jews, such people you can't really, are not rational thinking people. They are delusional people who, unfortunately, we can't really try to explain what they're thinking and why they're thinking, because they're not rational thinkers. Now, I think that there are, you know, numerous Mamar Chazal that seem to shed light in this direction. That's what we're saying today. You know, just that indicate that one has to be so thankful for the Malchus that we have today. You know, if some that don't want to appreciate it in that way, you know, will find justifications for not seeing it that way. But I think that there certainly is ample indication, at least in this Rambam also, to point us in that direction. Okay, so that was one major point I wanted to bring up tonight. I think it's a very beautiful ha'ara that really touches upon the core of what Chanukah and Nes Chanukah is all about. A couple of other thoughts about Chanukah. Two brief thoughts from Harav Twersky, Rav Meir Twersky Shlita, on Chanukah. One is the following. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, you know, that the have the Gemara here. Okay, I don't want to quote it correctly. So let me just, I'll go to the second part. I don't want to quote this incorrectly. One of, Rav Twersky said the following. He said, the Gemara tells us that the menorah is supposed to be lit, really, on the outside of one's home, at the entrance to one's home. And yet the Rambam says that, you know, the minhag today is that we light inside. And yes, in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, they've been able to, you know, restore the halacha or the practice to its originally intended mode of performance, lighting on the outside. Baruch Hashem, Lander College has restored the practice to its original intended lighting on the outside, at least over here that dorms drive by. Yeah, the little glass, you know, glass boxes. You know, we light by the windows, so we do have some proximity to stay outside. But, you know, the minhag in Klal Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz is to light on the inside. And certain times the Ramah, when, you know, it was much more widespread, it wasn't even, you know, by the window facing outside, it was inside on the table. It was, you know, on your kitchen table.
Oh, well, dangerous
stuff. Right, it was dangerous too. But Twersky asking, what's the, you know, the I guess the lesson, Bederech HaMachshava, from the fact that the practice of lighting Ner Chanukah, which is supposed to be on the outside, you know, over time evolved to being lit on the inside. So he said very simply, very beautifully, that we know from Balei Machshava that the purpose of Ner Chanukah on the outside is to illuminate the Choshech, illuminate the darkness around us. You know, to spread the light of religious inspiration to others outside. Right? We know from the Chassidus Svarim that Ner Chanukah represents that small flame of inspiration, of religious inspiration that lives inside each and every Jew. By lighting the Ner Chanukah on the outside, we're attempting to rekindle, reignite that flame, that spark in those that are still in a sense of Choshech around us on the outside. So Twersky said very simply, he said, perhaps the idea, B'derech HaMachshava, as to why the minhag evolved, that we no longer light on the outside, but light on the inside, is because halacha is teaching us. I think this goes in line with the Rav's idea that halacha has a certain philosophy behind it. There's a halacha on the one hand, there's just a practice that we do perform, but there's also a machshava philosophy behind the halacha. So here, Rav Twersky once suggested that the philosophy, the machshava behind this halacha, is very simply the following. If a Jew wants to be able to inspire those on the outside, we first have to inspire ourselves on the inside. Because we first have to strengthen ourselves from within, religiously, philosophically, in our frumkeit, in our amunah. We have to strengthen ourselves first and light up our inner darkness, so to speak. Light up the home on the inside first. And only then will we be successful in moving the light to the outside, to those beyond us in the choshech, out beyond the house. Very beautiful idea that the need to, yefutza mayana secha chutza, to first strengthen oneself personally in amunah, in Yahadus and Frumkeit and Shmiras HaMitzvos and Limud HaTorah in Tefillah. And then, once we've strengthened ourselves on the inside, then and only then we'll be successful in sharing that with others beyond on the outside.
So you're implying then that previous generations didn't have to...
So again, it's meant to be, it's the lesson for ourselves. No, the need to strengthen ourselves on the inside first before going to the outside. I'm sorry? Okay, perhaps. I think it's just a very important, beautiful idea there as well. So that was what I heard from Rav Tversky a number of years ago. One other thought, which I just heard today, I heard it quoted, Rabbi Shalom Rosner quoted this from Rabbi Blech, Rabbi Benjamin Blech of Oceanside. Also a very simple but beautiful thought. Rabbi Blech pointed out again, noting the positioning of the menorah, al pidin. Not only is the menorah supposed to be lit on the outside by the entrance, but where is it supposed to be positioned in the entrance?
Opposite the mezuzah.
So you have mezuzah miyamin and menorah mibasmol. So what's the significance of that? Having the mezuzah on one side and the menorah on the other side. Menorah on the left side of the entrance, mezuzah on the right. So Rav Luch suggested so beautifully as follows. He said, many of us, you know, have an easier time maintaining a higher standard of Shmiras HaMitzvos when we're in the safety of our own homes. We can say brachos with kavana. We can adhere to a higher kashrus standard because we're in control. We're, you know, we're masters of our own domain. We don't have to worry about anybody else looking at us, thinking about us. We just do our own thing in our house, and that's where we're more successful in doing things properly. When we get out into the outside world and the professional world, and we have all these business associates and business luncheons and non-Jews or irreligious Jews watching us, all of a sudden our brachos, you know, become a little more rushed. Our kavanah is not what always should be. Maybe, you know, we try to find some ins and outs when it comes to kashrus standards. Well, you know, he brought me this food, especially brought it for me. Is hashkacha as good as it should be? It's probably good enough. You know, v'chahina, v'chahina. We sometimes, when we're out there in the outside world and there are others around us who are not necessarily maintain the same standards that we are, we feel some downward pressure on our own religious standards as well. On the other hand, there are some Jews who, when they're, you know, outside the home, and there are other like from Jews around them, there's peer pressure, you know, there's communal pressure to dress a certain way, to daven a certain way, to look a certain way, to act a certain way. We're embarrassed to go places where people might see us going and that maybe we shouldn't be going into, whatever the case might be. Some of us find it easier to be, you know, living Torah mitzvahs to a higher standard when we're in the public eye. But in the privacy of our own homes, we find it a little more challenging. No one's watching anyways. Who's going to know the difference if I eat this hashgacha, that hashgacha, whatever the case might be. So Rav Luch suggested so beautifully. He said, the menorah and the mezuzah on opposite sides of the doorpost. The mezuzah on the right side going into the house. We know from the Rambam, in Hilchos Mezuzah, tells us the purpose of the mezuzah is when you walk into the house and the mezuzah is on your right side, you see the mezuzah and you remind yourself that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here watching everything I do, and you Shvisi Hashem, you know, not to forget that God is watching, and that should instill in me a sense of Yiras Hashem and an ability to rise to higher standards in my Avodas Hashem. And so too, going out of the house into the Rosh Hashanah, with the menorah then on my right. That as well reminds you to take that inspiration, that spark of frumkeit from the house to the outside as well, and to live to that same standard when I'm going out of the house. So whichever Jew I am, whether I find it easier to be a better Jew on the outside, whether I find it easier to be a better Jew on the inside, whichever which way I go, I've got that reminder of mezuzah going in, menorah going out. And perhaps precisely because Hanukkah is a time when the Yavanim tried to impose on us the assimilation. Oh, you're with us, you're like us. That was when they tried to, you know, influence us in the Rosh Hashanah domain to be more like them. We have the menorah reminding us, going outside, you're interacting with the outside culture. Remember, Jews and Yavanim don't mix. We stay separate from one another. We maintain our own standards and our own Avodas Hashem goals, regardless of whether we're in or whether we're outside of the privacy of our own home. Okay, I think we can conclude with that. Shlomi, you had a big kids for it?
Off tape.
Off tape? Okay.
Off tape it is.
Mess it up, that's why.
Okay.